Welcome to the Dad.io podcast. I'm Ryan.
I'm Andrew, and we are two guys navigating fatherhood in a digital society.
That's right. Life supplies the inputs.
And we supply the outputs.
And we are back. You are listening to the Dad.io podcast. And Andrew, it's June. It's Home Automation Month.
It is Home Automation Month. Right before I recorded this episode, I went and looked ahead to see if there's an official Home Automation Month. I didn't really find anything. So we are officially making June Home Automation Month because I think it's the perfect time, and I think you're the same way, Ryan, to start all these projects with getting everything around your house set up and maybe run a little bit more efficient.
We are planting the Dad.io flag in the fertile ground of the month of June and declaring it Home Automation Month. So, Father's Day is going to be coming up here. We've got Amazon Prime Day is going to be coming up, which is a hit or miss a lot of times. But I will say that last year, Amazon Prime Day was kind of my ground zero for getting a lot of my systems up and running. Because I made out like a bandit last year, I felt. And we'll get into some of that stuff. Like, obviously, we're going to be talking about all of the products that we have that we use on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think we both stuck our toe in the waters with doing smart lights. And I think that's what got us all started on this. And I know last year with Amazon Prime Day, they had some pretty good discounts on the Philips Hue products.
I got an incredible discount, I felt, on my Philips Hue initial setup. And then I progressively spent more and more and more and more and more money decking out every light bulb in my house with Philips Hue, because I'm a total fanboy for it, and we will be talking about Philips Hue. Do you want to throw out some of the other topics that we're going to be discussing this month? And just so everybody knows too, while Andrew's pulling up the list here, we are planning on doing not just our usual two shows a month. We want to aim to do four shows this month. This is going to be a jam packed full of content for us.
Yes, every Friday we're going to be releasing an episode a month for Home Automation Month this year.
And an important part of this is we want to interact with you guys. This is your chance to ask questions, pick our brains a little bit, because we're not professionals by any means, but we have some very good experience with this stuff. And one thing that I was discussing with Andrew before we started too is an important rating scale that I want to try to incorporate into all of these discussions. I don't know what to call it exactly. I'm referring to it as the
spousal approval rating.
The spousal approval rating, the spousal tolerance rating, something along those lines of how much fun do we get to have before our wives are like, yeah, this is cool, but it's not practical. Because I can tell you from my own experience, I might get super excited about some of this stuff, and then my wife is just like, yeah, look, it's great, but I'm never going to use it, so it's not practical in our home kind of thing. And I think that we have several products that we're going to be putting up against that scale, and hopefully to give you all a reference point too, as you start to bring these items into your home, how tolerable the other people in your house are going to be to them. So hopefully we'll be able to give you a little bit of insight into that as well. So Andrew, what are some of the topics that we've got scheduled for this month?
Well, like we just talked about it, we're going to do a whole episode on smart lights and basically how we all got started on that. And we're also going to look at the Nest products. They are expanding there with more than just the home thermostats. They've expanded to a whole security system. And we're going to look at maybe some of the other security systems out there. And the Ring Video Doorbell, that's one of those things I haven't got yet that I am looking forward to getting, hopefully maybe for Christmas.
I'm actually super stoked about one of those too. And there's a lot of competition to all of these things out too. Where a product like the Ring doorbell used to be kind of the only option that you had, now there's at least three or four different options. I mean, Amazon has dipped their toes into that one, and there's several other big companies that are looking at it too. So that's kind of the fun part about talking about home automation, just kind of right here out of the gate as an introduction, is the things that we're going to talk about. Again, it comes from personal experience. It comes from the things that we like, what we've known to work, what we've known to not work so well or not so user friendly. But this stuff is evolving just so quickly and so fast that by the time you hear this, there's probably going to be a ton of new stuff out there as well. And that's kind of the fun part about all of this.
Yeah, we're also going to look at some ways at being green with power monitoring. I'm doing a test right now with the Sense Energy Monitor, and I'm only about like a month and a half, 2 months in. That's doing pretty great right now. And we're going to look at some of the other miscellaneous smaller items out there, from smart plugs, which could be used anything from turning on a lamp to a fan to anything you plug in. And we're going to expand on that to some of the bigger items out there, from dishwashers, washing machines, and even Wi-Fi enabled hot water tanks
and lawnmowers, because I want the smart lawnmower so badly. It's so cool. And trust me, and another thing I'll throw out here too is we reached out to a lot of companies and we actually got some really good feedback. So we will be telling you when we are referring to a product or reviewing a product that we received a discount on, or we received a promotional item for to review. We will let you guys know when those scenarios come up, because I was shocked by the overwhelming amount of support that we got from a lot of these big companies that wanted us to talk about their product. And in most cases, I think in almost all cases, we were actually already using their products in our homes and reached out to them and said, hey, look, we really like this thing. Do you want to give us something else to play with, or is there something that we could work out to allow us to mention them on our show? So we will let you know when those scenarios crop up as well. But everything that we're going to be discussing is our own opinion, is from our own experience with this stuff. So that's a little bit of an overview of what's happening in June. This week we are going to be talking about home assistants. And Andrew, give us a quick rundown. What are we referring to when we talk about a home assistant?
We're going to talk about the what we have determined are some of the three best home assistants. You got the Amazon Alexa, you got Google Home, and you got Siri from Apple. Those are kind of the foundations. If you want to talk to those devices to get some of your smart home products activated and working.
And I'm very happy that I've already removed my Google Home Mini from the office. It's actually out in our family room now, because as we're talking about this stuff, it does tend to be pretty sensitive. So it just, even like referring to it, I feel like it knows that I'm talking about it. And I can almost guarantee that we're going to hear it chirp off in the next room over here.
Yeah,
talk about this one.
Yeah, we're going to try to hopefully not activate any of your devices if you already have some out there. But if it does, we're sorry.
You know what? You'll enjoy it. We'll make it say something funny for you. We'll get you a laugh out of it at least. So to kick things off, Andrew, what home assistants are you using right now? What do you have experience with?
Right now, I have Google Home, and I use my phone and Apple Watch to use Siri.
I also have Google Home. I have the main Google Home unit is in our living room, and we have three Google Home Minis in various rooms across our house. I also have an iPhone and I have Siri. We'll get into like our differing opinions on these kind of two different environments. But just so everybody knows that's the main things that we're going to be talking about. I don't personally have a lot of experience with Amazon Alexa. I have the wand like you have, Andrew, that you can like scan products with, and it's been sitting on my refrigerator, I think, since the second day I got it. And I've maybe used it once.
Well, they were running a good promotion on it when they first announced it and they released it, that if you buy it, you get, for I think it was $20, you get a $20 credit to your account. So it was basically free.
Right. And I mean, I'm not going to complain about getting something for free. It's a fun gadget to play around with. And I feel like, and I guess we should have explained what this is too. I have not really seen it mentioned from Amazon
since it was announced.
But it's basically just a little handheld remote almost that has a built-in barcode scanner that you can scan a product and it ties back to your Amazon account, and it will automatically, I think it automatically adds that product to your cart.
It does, because I tried it out. I want to make sure mine was still working. I tried about a month ago.
And it may have been fixed since then, because I haven't played with it for probably close to a year at this point. But I know that when it first came out, there's a lot of controversy with it, because you would scan a product, it goes out to Amazon, finds that product, and loads it into your cart for you. The problem is that it was not very selective as to the vendor that it was selecting. So there was a lot of kind of unscrupulous vendors out there that if you scanned, let's say, like a package of toilet paper that should cost like, you know, $3 or something for a package of toilet paper, well, they were jacking up the prices to like $16 because they knew that there was a chance that it might get selected with this thing and add it to your cart, and then you may not pay attention, and all of a sudden you've ordered four rolls of toilet paper for $16, and there's a lot of controversy. So maybe they fixed that since then. I hope that they would, because I know there's a lot of people that are really upset about that. Did you actually use it? Like, did you buy the product that you scanned?
No, I was just using it to play around with. But to get back to what you were just saying, I feel like that might be an underlying issue with Amazon, because I've tried their subscription service, and it seems like I add an item for a subscription and where it'll be delivered every 3, 4, or 5 months.
Right.
And the last time it happened, it was like it selected the item that was the most expensive. It's like, why did I have to pay $40 for it when this other vendor had it for like 30?
Correct. And I've had a similar experience too. My wife, she buys her makeup off Amazon, and she was ordering two of them basically like every month to every month and a half. So I said, well, let's just go ahead and set this up on a subscription, because you're going to get it anyway. And the same situation happened, where usually like the order for both of those compacts of makeup, or I don't know what it is. It's makeup. Both things would usually cost us like $12. And then one time we got it and the bill was like $26, and here they had almost doubled the price of the product. And they may have sent me an email, you know, to give them credit. They may have done that or tried to notify me in some way, but it wasn't in an obvious way that I noticed. I wish it would have popped up as an alert to the app or something like that and let me know. Like, hey, the price on this has really gone up. Are you sure you still want it? Because it's almost double what it was. And not to go down too big of a tangent with this, but I do think it's important to bring up, because that those sort of situations are going to tie back to a lot of the conversation that we have about the assistants and some of the negative things that can happen when using them, because you do have to be aware, I think, of what it's doing. Alexa more so, because I think the big selling point of Amazon Alexa is the fact that you can ask it to order this stuff for you and it will automatically do it. But if you're just trusting that it's going to select the same thing that you think that you're getting, chances are it's going to select it from a different vendor or something, and you may be paying way more than what you thought that you were when you asked Alexa to order that stuff for you.
Yeah, that's the main, I think, selling point of the Echo, is to like, hey, order this for me, and it'll just like pick the first thing. It's probably the most expensive, and that's why I would prefer to just do all of my ordering by myself. I go on to the Amazon website and add the certain item I want to my cart, so I know exactly how much I'm paying for it. Because there's times, I believe, with the Echo that you can say, order this for me, it'll order it without even telling you the price. Or,
oh yeah, I think that there are settings that you can go into on your account to tell it, hey, look, if I tell you to order toilet paper, like, I don't know why I'm on toilet paper. Apparently, I'm very picky about toilet paper. I could almost do a whole episode just about the differences in toilet paper, but I digress. Anyway, so let's say I tell Alexa I want to order my usual 16-pack of toilet paper. You can go into the settings and tell it, like, hey, look, I trust you. Just if I tell you to order it, just send it to me. Get it here as quick as you can. And there's a huge amount of trust that's involved there that I think they're still working out the kinks to, and there's not really a perfect answer yet from what I have seen. And I will say, again, I don't have a lot of personal experience using Alexa. However, I quiver to think about the amount of money that I've spent on Amazon over the years. So I do feel like I'm very, very knowledgeable about Amazon itself. And like you said, the things that you're seeing on the website are the same things that the assistant, when Echo goes out to do this stuff for you, it's going to run into the same things that you see as a person, but only it's going to make that decision without your consent in some ways. So I agree with you. I would prefer just to go out to Amazon, just go out to the website and just do this stuff myself instead of trusting the assistant to do it for me.
Yeah, I really don't want my assistant to be ordering things. And I know Google is moving on to where they can have your assistant book your appointments for you now. I think that was one of the recent things they announced at their Google I.O. conference just a couple weeks ago.
Did you watch the video for it, by the way?
I did not watch the video, but I seen a couple of those calls go through on the YouTube channel. And I think afterwards I heard that they were edited a little bit to kind of remove some of the identifications for the restaurants or services that they're calling to. But the general aspect of the Google Assistant making your calls for you was still the same.
Yes, and I mean there was a lot of controversy over the fact that they did edit some of the demo calls that they presented on stage. The name of this product too is called Google Duplex, and it is going to be a feature that's going to be built into Google Assistant. But above and beyond the initial reaction to people saying like, oh, well, you know, they weren't being 100% upfront with us about like how accurate it really is because they did edit those calls. So how else did they edit them? They haven't said. But there are a lot of bigger security questions that are at risk here because some states do not allow phone calls to be recorded without two-party consent. And that's a very important thing because these phone calls will be recorded that the Google Assistant can make for you. If I tell it, hey, to call and book me a hair appointment or something like that, like they did in the demo, certain states, you would have to notify the person on the other end that, hey, this is a robotic call. It's being recorded. I would be shocked if Apple isn't working on something similar to this as well. To bring it back to strictly talking, like let's talk about Google Home real quick in regards to how that we are utilizing that in our homes. Obviously, if the Duplex feature does officially roll out, I'm stoked for that. I think it's a super cool expansion from what the Google Home can do right now or what the Google Assistant can do. But I'm excited for what it can do for me already. I'm shocked by how much I use that on a day-to-day basis because when I first ordered it, when it first came out, I want to say that I bought one within the first week or two. It was like my Christmas present 2 years ago or a year ago, whenever it came out. And I ordered it in November and told my wife, like, look, this can be my Christmas present. I want this. It's super cool. She was very skeptical about it. And when it arrived, I think that I won her over pretty quick on that spousal acceptance scale that we're using. She was a convert to the Google Home pretty quickly once she saw how easy it is to interact with it, especially doing things like requesting a song through Spotify or something like that. It's very seamless. It works. I'd say it works correctly about 90% of the time. I don't know what your usage has been with it. If you've seen the same numbers, I feel like it's pretty accurate.
Well, and even when it doesn't work as expected, when I ask something, it gives you a little laugh.
It does. Sometimes the response it comes up with are just downright hilarious.
Well, I don't even know what I heard the other day. You were over at my house and we were trying to ask it something. I forget what. And it said the answer is 14.
And we're like, we weren't even talking about a math problem. Like, I just felt like Google was like, look, I don't know what you're talking about. Look, it's 14. And she was probably like, look, I got a 50-50 chance that this is right.
I think it would have been better if it was 42.
I'm surprised that for some of the quirky answers that it can give, that it wouldn't have gone that direction with it, actually. But it's a lot of fun with kids, too, especially... We were over at your house one night and we're messing with your kids' attempts to get it to recognize their voice because they're not quite articulate enough to get it to fire every time, but it seemed like it was firing about like once every 8 or 9 times for him.
Yeah, our 4-year-old, he's just now, his rating is about 50-50 for when it hears him, and he always likes to say, "What sound does a train make?"
How many times have you heard what sound a train makes just daily?
4 or 5 times. Yeah, 4 or 5 times. I'd say a week. He doesn't do it all the time. And we try to keep him out of it for a little bit. So it's
definitely a fun thing to have around for the kids. I know when we had older kids in our home through foster care that they can ask it, like, what sounds do animals make? They had a lot of fun with that. I like the thing where you can ask it to tell you a story and it will like tell you kind of like a funny story, like depending on the age of the child. And it has some games that you can play with your kids. We tried that. We had it over at your house one night too. It seemed like that was a little like...
For our 4-year-old, it's a little
complicated.
Much.
Yeah, it's a little complicated for real young kids. But still, it's a neat feature to have.
Yes, my wife too, she's on board with the music. She likes to have music playing in the house. And it's really good when you can just say, hey, play this playlist on Spotify. Yeah. And then you can have if you have multiple units, like I have one main unit in my living room, then I have minis basically throughout the house. And if you set them up in the app, you can just say, hey, play this playlist on the whole house.
And that to me, and I'm glad that you brought that up, probably my favorite feature, hands down, of Google Home is the fact that the Google Home Minis are dirt cheap. Especially, it seems like almost every week somebody is running a special on them that you can usually get them for as low as like $30.
And well, and that's what how I dip my toe into this is like, okay, I'm gonna get an assistant. If I want it, I want it in almost every room of my house. Everywhere was running a great deal on it this last Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We got one at Target for $19 for a Google Home Mini.
We did the same thing. We bought my father-in-law one, and then I went back and I ended up with three. So I bought all three of mine at the same thing from Target. Because, again, like they were running a special where you paid $40 and you got like a $20 gift card for it. And, you know, we go to Target all the time. So it just made sense. That was a great deal on that.
Well, and even looking at just a plain Bluetooth speaker, that's not even the best quality. You can't find one for $19.
No, not at all. And I the quality of the Google Home Minis, I think it's really good. I mean, it's not if you're somebody that is into prosumer level.
Yeah, if you're audio an audiophile,
you're going to find fault with it. I mean, I consider myself like I'm pretty picky when I come to music. I like things to sound good. However, for what it is, for the size of it, I really don't have any complaints. It's a little bassy, in my opinion, but I think that that's just to be expected. Again, with the size, it sounds good, especially at the higher end volumes. I haven't noticed where it distorts a lot when I'm playing music, and I don't know. And I know we listen to a lot of very different styles of music, but I like some heavier things that on a lot of cheaper speakers, you know, when you're listening to like hard rock or like heavy metal kind of stuff, it'll distort very, very easily. And I have not seen that from the Google Home Minis or from the main unit. I think the main unit sounds incredible. Again, for it's a $100 speaker, it sounds better than, like you said, if you went out and bought a $100 Bluetooth speaker, I don't think that you're going to get the quality that you get out of the main Google Home. I've not heard the Google Home Max, but from everything I've read, it's even... that's would be like a prosumer level speaker, but it's very expensive. It's well outside of the normal person's probably price range when they're looking for something.
Yeah,
like this.
The retail price I think for the Google Home Mini is $50. You can find them on sale for $30 to $40. It seems every couple months they get on sale, and even for $30-$40, you can't find a Bluetooth speaker for that price.
No, not one that sounds that good.
And you get all these Google Assistant features built into it.
And really, the key to having an assistant, and once you kind of choose a lane, once you kind of choose, you know, whichever product that you're going to back, if you're going to go with the Amazon Alexa, or you're going to go with the Google Home, or you're going to go with like the Siri HomePod, which we'll talk about that in a minute too, but once you kind of choose which one you're going to do, I do feel like you kind of have to commit, because if you're going to buy one, like you brought up earlier. Just having one of these in your house is probably not enough to get the full experience, to get the full effect. And that's why they came out with the Echo Dots. That's why they came out with the Google Home Minis, is because that's really how you flesh out the system. And in and of themselves, they are fairly limited. If you're just going to buy the Google Assistant, yeah, it's cool. It does some really cool things in terms of linking your Spotify or your Google Music account to it, and you want to call songs or playlists, it's awesome for that. It does really cool things. Like if you just have a quick question on something, I use it when I'm in the kitchen a lot because I'm terrible with like conversions for measurements. And I love the fact that I can look at it and say, hey, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to trip everybody's things. But I can ask it, you know, what's 3 tablespoons to teaspoons? Convert that for me and it'll just automatically do it. Or if I want to ask it to set a timer, again, older kids, it's really nice to have that in the room where there's an audible thing to say, hey, you're on timeout for 3 minutes. Oh, do you want me to add 2 minutes to that timer? No, you don't. Okay, all right, because I can do that too. I can ask to add two minutes to that timer if I need to, if you're still acting up on time.
Yeah, I was like asking my son, like, okay, we're going to set a 10-minute timer. He's like, no, I want an 8-minute timer. I was like, okay, from 10 minutes and you want 8 minutes? Fine, I'll give you an 8-minute timer.
He hasn't mastered the bargain on that one yet. But do you use it for that, though? Because, I mean, when we had older kids through foster care, I used it a lot. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, well, it's a good way to let them know, like, hey, we're cleaning up. You got, like, 10 minutes left to play. When the timer goes off, we're going to go do this next task.
And for little kids especially, having that audible, like, where, look, you said it. They heard you set the timer. They heard it respond and say, okay, I have a timer for 10 minutes. And then, like... You know, even though there's nothing persistent telling them like that is counting down, they know in the back of their head it's happening. And then I think it's good, too, to have that audible reaction when the timer goes off. They've realized, okay, that was 10 minutes that just went by. Okay, I heard him said it. Yeah, it was fair. You said 10 minutes. Okay, 10 minutes is up. Now it's time to go on to the next thing. I think it's an awesome. That's an awesome use for that.
Yeah, I know there was times when I've told my kids, like, okay, and 5 minutes, we're going to go do this. And I said, okay, 5 minutes are up, and they like never believe me. It's like, yeah, 5 minutes are up. I've been checking on my watch. And it was like, oh, how about I play for 5 more minutes? But when you have that audible timer going through your assistant, it's so much easier for them. It's like they can actually like, okay, it's time to do the next thing.
So what you're saying is that your kids believe Google, but they don't believe you. Is that where we've evolved to as a society?
It can. I mean, my 18-month-old or just about 18-month-old, she said, Google.
For our, my favorite thing from like a real little kid, for our 14-month-old, the funniest thing is that with having our Philips Hue system integrated into it, my wife and I both have gotten into the habit of it's just more convenient to say, hey, turn the family room lights to 70% or 30% or whatever, and it'll dim those lights for us. And it's so funny because now whenever we do that, our 14-month-old, he just immediately shoots and looks up at the light and he's just waiting for it. And then it dims and he just looks at you like, how did you do that? And it's just like this very like mystified reaction.
Yeah, my oldest, he was showing his grandpa, my oldest dad, the other day, about how the lights can dim, like, and that was one of the times when Google understood him what he said and the lights turned down to 50%.
And he felt so powerful too.
I wasn't there for, but I could see his face and the amazement that he would have had for that.
Speaking of other users using the Google Home specifically too, I do like the fact that you can go into settings and you can set up multiple users for that. My wife has her own Spotify account. She has her own playlist. I can guarantee you that when she asks to play her favorite playlist or something, she does not want to hear mine. So it is cool that it will recognize different people's voices, and then you can specify accounts to each user for your Google Home, and that's a really nice feature as well. I think kind of like to tie this all back and kind of wrap up the discussion on that, is there any other creative uses that you're doing with the Google Home right now? Is there anything else that like you've found to be useful that might be good to let our listeners know? I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I have that's, I think I hit the big ones.
Yeah, right now I'm just mainly using it to turn on and off the lights. I think that's amazing there, just being able to control those. And I think that's great with how it ties into the Philips products or even some of the other products, other smart light products out there.
So would you say that's your favorite feature of it then?
Yes, and I feel like I haven't really even touched the surface on what it can do. It's just with the lights and everything, even for like bedtime, and just being able to set the lights for bedtime. And they have their new routines, I think you can set up in Google. You can just set that up and it'll set your lights to a certain scene that you want for you.
So we'll get into more of that when we start talking about the smart lights.
But having that
capability.
It's basically amazing. Like a light switch. You basically tell it what to do and it sets all your lights for you.
Yeah. It's so cool. First time that like I saw it do that, like even though I knew it was about to happen when I do it, the first time I asked it to do something and all my lights changed what I told it to do was incredible. It's just a neat feeling. It feels such like a sci-fi feeling to it. And it's also awesome too because they did do an update recently to Google Home where you can do what I refer to as like nested requests. So you can say, hey, do this and this and this. And that is so powerful when you have other connected services to it.
It gets a little convoluted, I guess, because you need to make sure the trigger words you're saying in the correct way. You can't say, turn my living room lights to 50% and my dining room lights off. Yeah. It's like you have to say it a certain way. Like you can't say, turn my living room and dining room lights off. You need to like finish it all out. And it takes a little bit of playing around with it. Like you need to say, turn my living room lights off and turn my dining room lights off. You need to like, you can't like combine them, like turn my living room and dining room lights off. It doesn't understand all those. So that there is kind of a learning curve to find out what the trigger words and to get it to do the right thing.
Yes. And I would absolutely agree with that. And I'm glad that you brought that up because I guess I've almost forgotten about that to an extent, just because I'm so, I guess, trained to say the right thing. But you are right. Like, when you do, when you do first get started with, and it's not just Google, it's any of them, they have, like, they have, like, a certain syntax that you have to learn that it understands. Like, you can't talk to it the way you would talk to a person. You're still talking to a machine. You're still talking to a robot. So you got to do it in their language. And you do have to be very specific. Sometimes you have to be ultra specific as to what that request is. Not so much that I've ever felt that it was cumbersome, but it, like you said, you just kind of have to learn what are the right keywords. What is the correct like order of operations to request what I need it to do are.
And the one last thing that I remember that it's the Google Assistant, probably any of them can do, it helps settle arguments with your spouse.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yes, so happy you threw that one out there.
I forget what it was. Me and my wife was talking about something the other day. I was like, no, it's not this, it's this other thing. And I was 100% adamant I was correct. She was 100% adamant she was correct. We asked Google. This time I was correct, and I kind of felt a little better. I don't know if that happens all the time, but usually she's correct most of the time. But this time I was like, okay, gotcha. Thank you, Google.
You felt so vindicated that you got one right with the wife. You're absolutely right. It is awesome for that. You know, you talked about your favorite feature with that. I would say that my favorite feature, just to wrap this up, is definitely the whole home audio system element, just because prior to Google Home or prior to Alexa or to the Echoes offering that, if you wanted that system in your house, you had to go with like a Sonos system or something like that, which is very high-end audio. It sounds amazing.
Or like a very wired, expensive, like custom system where you have wires going everywhere. Correct. There really wasn't a good wireless setup for that.
And they came along and said, look, we're going to have these devices. We're going to have speakers built in. Let's just go ahead and throw that feature in. I love that. Probably more than anything, the fact that I can be listening to my, especially like in the morning. With our house, we have a split-level house, and I feel like we're pretty much running from the top of the house to the bottom, especially in morning routines, going to the laundry room, going here and going to the kitchen. Having that, if I start a playlist in my bedroom in the morning and I'm getting ready to come downstairs to the kitchen, I'm still listening to it, then go downstairs to the family room to get something done there, and just to have that seamless, it's just so cool to me. I love it. That's my favorite. That's my absolute, above all else, favorite feature of it. But again, to get the full experience, you do have to have more than one of these devices, and that can be a caveat to some people because you may not want to put the money out there for it. It can get expensive if you let it.
The main unit and the mini units, they have the same feature set.
They do. So yeah, I mean, you're not losing anything other than the sound quality.
The sound quality is a little better on the regular unit. But if you are just looking for some of these features and you want to like dip your toe on it, buy two or three of the minis.
Yeah, absolutely. Then once you figure out ways that you're going to use it and ways that will be beneficial to you, then you can upgrade and get the normal unit or get the max unit. And I know Amazon, they have like their version, like the max as well. So that's an interesting segue too, because Apple with Siri has existed solely on their phones and on their iPads for several years. I feel like they introduced Siri. I think Siri came out before anyone else, really. That was like the first digital assistant kind of thing. They were like kind of, you know, ones that existed in the fray, but the first like first party to do that, I believe, was Apple with Siri. You're much better with the history of this kind of stuff with Apple than I am. But I do believe that they were one of the first ones, weren't they?
Yeah, they were one of the first ones. They actually purchased Siri they acquired them as an outside company and then incorporated that into their product line. And there was some backlash on that one where they actually took some features away from the Siri app that was available after they bought the company. But it was kind of, it seemed like the first couple of years was on the back burner, and that kind of allowed Amazon to catch up. And I think when Google seen Amazon and where they were at, Google just threw a boatload of resources to it. And so even though Siri came out first, I think they're almost neck and neck. It seems like Alexa, Google, and Siri are almost on the same level, and like they're kind of one-upping each other every couple months and kind of staying there. Even though Siri was out first, it's not really ahead of the others.
And it was interesting to watch too, because Apple, being a company that definitely always strives to be kind of cutting edge or kind of be right there, they want to be the ones that introduce, you know, the new big thing. But it also seems like within recent years that they've almost kind of waited for the other companies to like set the groundwork to say, hey, here's the new, like, this is where the technology is going. This is where the hardware is going. And it almost feels like Apple has been watching and then saying, okay, you're going to do that. That's good. People like that. All right, we're going to do our version. And it's going to be like, it's going to be four times better than what everyone else had at the time. That being said, it, for a while, and again, I know that you followed it a little bit closer than I did, so you probably had heard it about it before I did. But I was very interested that when they came out and announced that they were going to have the HomePod, which is their digital speaker assistant, that, A, they waited a long time. I mean, in terms of technology stuff, they waited 2 or 3 years before that came out. I mean, Amazon or Alexa had already been out for several years with the Echo. Google Home came out about, I think, the year following the Echo. So for Amazon or for Apple, they really kind of sat that one out for a long time before they threw their hat in the ring. And the HomePod, it's $400, I believe?
$350. There's a lot of analysts out there that are saying it's a flop. But if you look at in the terms of the volume that Apple does, they say a lot of things are a flop, but Apple is, the volumes they do outweigh a lot of the other companies, is like with the Apple Watches and stuff. So I still think the Apple HomePod is doing decent, but it's not taking the market that I think Google and Alexa are in, because their prices start, like, for their normal unit are around $150, which I know the Google Home you can get on sale for like $79 a lot of the times. And I think even with the Echoes, they have their Prime Day, that's always on sale. And you can probably get that for $99 to $120 usually, depending how it is. And that's for their main unit, their middle of the road unit. And like I said, we found the Google Minis for $19 this past Christmas. The Echo Dots you can find for like $30, $40. The Apple HomePod, I just think, is priced out of the reach of most people.
The hardware you get in it is, I would say it's worth it. If you're into that prosumer level of audio and you have the ears for it, I would say it's probably worth it. However, there's a couple downsides to me that when I researched it. One, it only works with Amazon or with Apple Music. I don't believe that you can build, it doesn't have any Bluetooth capabilities to tie any other devices into it to let them use it. And can you do Spotify on it?
You cannot when it comes to music playback, they're basically have you locked into Apple Music. But when it comes to a lot of these other services that Siri can tie into, it's still an open-ish standard. But with the HomePod, like, I was actually at the Apple store a couple weeks ago, get my phone fixed, and I had some time to wait around, and I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this thing. I mean, it sounds pretty amazing just being right by it in a crowded, busy, loud store.
Oh, and it should. Again, at that price, it has good hardware, and there's not really any debate there. I guess where I was going with this thought originally too, is that I am very curious to see, will Apple do a mini version of the HomePod? Because there's been some rumors that I've heard that they may do something in the Beats line instead of branding it strictly as Apple, that they may come out with like a Beats
pill type something item like that with Siri built in.
Correct.
And the HomePod features.
And I could see that, because Apple tends to be a little more restrictive with their hardware, that like when they come up with the straight Apple line, like there's not usually a whole lot of varied deviations of that. It's usually the one thing. So I could definitely see them doing that. I would be shocked if they came out with like the actual Apple HomePod mini kind of thing, just because that doesn't seem like that would be the avenue that they would go in. I think that they're pushing the HomePod fairly hard. But again, like, I agree with what you said that I obviously, when you, I don't think that you can call it a flop, because the sales numbers are very impressive for this type of hardware. However, when you look at the greater market share, like you said, they waited kind of a long time.
And
most people already have a Google Home, or they already have an Amazon Echo, or they're already using those devices in their home. And as we said at the beginning of the show, I feel like once you choose whichever brand you're going to back, there is a little bit of a buy-in that you're kind of, if you buy three or four of these devices, chances are you're not going to add a competitor's device into that system as well, because there's too many things that don't talk. They don't play well together in a lot of ways.
Yeah, when it comes to these assistants, I was actually looking in the market to buy HomePod. It was like, because I was sold. Like, my wife, she really wanted the whole home audio thing. I was like, you know what? An Apple HomePod, that sounds great. We have an Apple Music subscription. It'll tie in perfectly to that. And it was supposed to be released at Christmas time, like December of 2017. And then they pushed it back. And I was like, okay. Like, I was really, I mean, I was kind of looking forward to one. I was like, yeah, you know what? It's a little pricey. That's a lot more than I want to spend on it. But for the most part, I trust Apple when it comes to these things. But then I seen these deals with the Google Minis for $19. Like, I can't pass this up. I need to get this item.
Right.
Like,
for the same price that you would pay for one HomePod, you can buy several devices for Google.
Yeah, I got my whole home outfitted. And yet I knew I was taking a cut on audio quality. I knew the Google Minis would not stand up to the quality of the HomePod.
Right.
But you have to think, do you want to have okay music in your house in every room? Or do you want to have like the best music? And I think for just having like music in the background, like, my wife loved having music on at Christmas. Just have some quiet music on in the background. At Christmas time, we have the tree up. You have that whole ambiance. The Google Home Minis and that whole product line works perfect for that.
Absolutely. And I think that the majority of people, again, if you're already into really high-end audio stuff, you already have a high-end audio system. And your chances of you going and buying a home assistant for the audio aspect, it's very low, to be honest. Like, if you're a big audiophile, you already have a cutting edge audio system at home. If that's what you like, you live and breathe, and that's how you want your music to sound. So you're not going to buy one of these anyway. I think that the Apple HomePod is probably a good in between if you already have bought into the Apple ecosystem, though. Because if you're an outsider, you're not going to buy the HomePod because it's not going to play well with anything else that you have. You already have to be bought into the Apple ecosystem. And I think that is probably its greatest advantage and its greatest weakness at the same time, is the fact that the people who are in the Apple ecosystem, they're going to buy it because it's Apple. But at the same time, they're not really going to appeal to anybody else. Whereas as Google Assistant and the Amazon Echo is a little more friendly to competing ecosystems. Because when I switched from my Android phone to my iPhone, I had zero downtime in terms of what I could do when I had an Android phone with Google Home to what I could do when I had the iPhone with Google Home, which was awesome that all those apps play together. The system works flawlessly, even though I don't have an Android anymore.
Yeah, I'm full in on the Apple ecosystem. I have MacBooks and Apple TVs and everything. You're kind of 50-50 now that you have the iPhone.
I'm a recent convert. And it would be interesting to almost have a whole show just about this topic, because I'll be the first to admit that for a long time, I have, well, for the last probably decade almost, been hardcore on Android. I bought the Galaxy S1 within like the first 2 weeks that thing was out, and that was probably one of my favorite phones that I've ever owned. That being said, when it comes to the assistants, I don't use Siri the way that I used the Google Assistant on my Android. Not that it isn't built into the operating system the exact same way. I just noticed that I don't call for it as much as I did. And I don't know what that reasoning is. I don't know if it's just because it's like a leftover of my Android days or what. But I had you, because we talked about the ways that you have integrated Siri into some of the other services that we're going to be talking about later on in this month. And I've tried to do the same thing. I've had varying degrees of luck with it. I think that because you have some more Apple devices in your home, it's a little bit easier to do it with for some of the features that I want. And just we'll go into this when we talk about Philips Hue and we talk about smart lights next week. But like one example of this is you were able to tie your lights and everything into Siri and Google Assistant at the same time. And it seems like you were able to kind of do both at the same time. You use Siri sometimes and you use Google sometimes, right?
Yes. Apple uses, if you have a HomePod, it'll use that as a HomeKit hub. Yes. Or if you have an Apple TV, it'll use that as a HomeKit hub that ties a lot of these different devices together. And with when you talk about Siri and home automation, you need to look for the stuff that's HomeKit compatible.
Yes.
And right now, there are a lot of different like smart lights and smart products out there. And some of them will only say it works with the Google Assistant or Amazon Alexa.
Right. And it does seem like there's more HomeKit compatible options coming to the market, but it's not as much as what's available on the
other. Yeah, it's usually your more brand name products, and that's the reason why I'm leaning towards those ones that kind of support all like three, like HomeKit from Apple and Siri to Google and Amazon, is because the HomeKit setup, Apple is requiring more security in their products.
And yes, and I would absolutely agree with that.
Because they want encryption and built in, but if you look at some of these items that only support Google or Amazon, their protocols aren't requiring the encryption.
Yes. Yes, and especially in today's world, security and in your information is basically constantly under attack. So I absolutely will tip my hat to Apple and say that they have always seemed to gone out of their way to make sure that your information is more secure and to make sure that anything that basically has access to your device or access to your account is following more stringent restrictions than what some of the other ones are.
Yes. And I know with some of the stuff that I have, I make sure it supports all three. And I want to do that just because if I wanted to like switch up ecosystems a little bit, I know it'll be compatible with them. Like Hue. That's one reason why I picked Hue over some of the other standards out there, is because if I were to use Siri on my phone or to use the Google Minis, it would be able to work them hand in hand. I use them interchangeably.
Absolutely.
Like there's times when I'm walking up the steps, I told Google to do something, and I'm telling my phone to do something else with the lights.
Absolutely. And I haven't had that experience of using both. I think that I've used Google now for so long that my brain is just trained to use that. And it just works. So I guess like for me too, like I haven't really had a reason to explore the options that Siri might give me over, or HomeKit might give me over what the Google Assistant has, because it's just worked for me for so long.
Well, and there's certain commands that I have that, like if I tell Siri to do something or if I tell Google to do something, I have my lights set up in each of their ecosystems, because you kind of have to set them up separately.
Yes.
You have to set it up for HomeKit and you have to set it up for Google. But if I put the same command in, Google will be like, I don't know what you're talking about. But Siri will be like, okay, I got it. Here you go.
So hold that thought until next week, because I feel like that's a point of discussion that we'll get into when we talk about specifically about Philips Hue next week. And some of those kind of quirky scenarios that come up. So for today, just kind of wrap this one up, end our discussion talking about some of the big three when it comes to the home assistants. We want to hear from the audience. We want to hear from you guys. What questions do you have? How are you guys using these in your own home?
Yeah, like I think we talked about, like to dip your feet into home automation, we started with lights, and that's where we know our information from, and that's how a lot of our systems are set up with.
And that's why, like throughout this month, we want to tell you about the different services that you can bring into these devices to really give you the full wireless home automation system and just make your house just feel like it's something out of Star Trek, basically, because this stuff is just so cool and sci-fi. It's awesome. I love it. So for this week, we'll wrap it up here. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Andrew.
Have a wonderful weekend.